Blog Talk Radio.
To Angels and Warriors Radio. I am Dawn Tovey, your host, and I hope you are doing wonderful this Tuesday evening. And can you believe we are already into February? Oh my goodness. It seems like just a few weeks ago was, you know, you were getting ready for Christmas, and now here we are already well into, well, not, I don't have to say well into February, but we're definitely into February at this point. So I hope everybody's year is going as fantastic as mine. I know I've had quite a few surprises, and they've been very unexpected, but I'm very excited with all of them. So it's definitely one of those things I like to I'll keep you guys abreast of what is going on as things progress, but not yet. So anyways, what else did I want to tell you guys? I wanted to let you know that we are doing a bunch of, you know, we're doing readings and stuff on Sundays, and we're going to be having quite a few new hosts so that you kind of can get a little bit of everything. We have some interesting people who are kind of on the political side, and then, of course, we have our authors as usual, and we have our psychics on Sundays, and then we have Tony on every other Tuesday. And I have to tell you, if you are in the process of looking to set a wedding date or to sign contracts or anything of that nature, you definitely want to give Tony a call, because there are some things, certain times, that you don't want to start new things. And I'll have him talk to us about that a little bit, because I know there's a retrograde coming up this month. And retrogrades are for finishing things, not starting them. So all that being said, let me go ahead and bring Tony on, and then we can just kind of go from there. Let me push the right button. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. It's a nice, cold, snowy day here in New York City.
Yeah.
It's a good day to be in on the phone instead of out in the crazy weather.
Right. Yeah, I know. We've heard that it was supposed to potentially snow off and on today. Yet to see it, and heard it's not supposed to stick, even if it does. So,
well, that's best, I guess. If you're not going to have a blizzard and stop everything dead in its tracks, then you should probably just have a light dusting. So.
True. So, talk to us a little bit about a retrograde. Let me back up. Today was a weird day. This whole week's been kind of weird. Is there something going on with the planets right now that any of us should kind of maybe be aware of?
Well, nothing super unusual. The biggest issue over about a week ago, and this may not impact everybody, but Mars was on Neptune. Let me just double check my listing here. There we go. As of today, Neptune is at 2 degrees Pisces and Mars is at 3 degrees Pisces. and Mercury, for that matter, is 0 degrees Pisces. So the three of them are very close together. And it's a little tricky because Neptune doesn't have, as I mentioned, doesn't have a lot to do with the physical world. And it can be dreamy. It can be very spiritual. It can be very spacey. So when Mars is conjunct Neptune, it can be difficult to get an action finished, you know, because it's a little unclear. Now, this is obviously going to affect people that have something important in their chart more at like 3 degrees Pisces than other people. But it's a general kind of atmosphere in the air. Mercury is in there too. Mercury is supposed to be about thinking. And once again, Neptune's like, well, let's think about, you know, all sorts of things. So it's oddly not a particularly practical week this week, okay? Not a good week maybe for doing your taxes or doing algebra, but rather a good week for dreaminess and a little less direct action.
Okay.
That might be the one thing I could say about it. But in general, I heard you talking earlier about, you know, when to start things and when not to. And before you even hop in retrograde, there's a month. The moon goes through all the signs once a month. And every month, half of the month is a good time to start things, and half of the month is a good time to draw things to a close. It doesn't mean you have to start it and finish it in 30 days.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that it's traditionally associated that from the moment of a new moon until the full moon, meaning when the moon is getting bigger in the sky, you know, from when there's no moon at all, the new moon, that's considered a period of initiation. We start a new project, it's a new moon, it's the moon is beginning to, you know, become a crescent, then a quarter moon, then a half moon, then a full moon. So there's that sense of growth and initiation. And generally speaking, if you're going to start something, you want to start it from the new to the full moon, which gives you around 14 days every month to get something started. And if you're planning on closing something out from the full moon down to the new moon, if you're going to make a conscious decision to close something out, that's a good time to close it out. So that's just a regular monthly cycle that comes all the time, you know, every month. So you've got that opportunity. And actually, you don't even really have to be an astrologer to look this up. A lot of calendars, standard calendar you get from a bank or wherever the heck you get your calendars, will often have the new moon and the full moon on the calendar. So, and you don't even have to know what sign it's in. Just know that if it's a new moon, it's a better time to start something. Now, of course, if you have to start it during after full moon, or if you have to end it during a new moon, it's not the end of the world, but it might just flow a little smoother if you do it with the flow of the planet as opposed to against it. But it's not like you're forbidden. Go the other way, because life isn't always fit. As we all know, life does not always fit pre-planned schedule. Mm-hmm. So, as for retrograde stuff, I know, let's see, Mercury goes retrograde a little later this month, and I'm just trying to see.
I think it's the 23rd or something.
Yes, so you're on top of it. Saturn goes, it's actually, now, some of the planets go retrograde frequently, which, as we know, Mercury does it 3 times a year. And the outer planets, meaning, you know, from roughly Jupiter on out, only go retrograde every year for a few months. So Saturn is starting its retrograde period on the 18th, which might make for an interesting chat next show on the 19th. Mercury is going retrograde on the 23rd, and then it goes back direct on March 17th. Now, Mercury retrograde happens 3 times a year, and just so everybody knows what that means, Mercury is about communications, Mercury is about planning, Mercury is about, to a certain degree, computers and thought and process. And so during the period of time when Mercury goes retrograde, some more powerfully than others, you may find your computer breaking down, you may find the internet dropping out, you may find travel plans get skewed in some way. It could just mean that you have to, you know, change them to another day, or they may have to. Nothing flows quickly or smoothly necessarily when Mercury is retrograde. Like I say, drop phone calls, meeting people for appointments, and the appointments get screwed up. All that little detailed planning can sometimes get a little screwy. It is a great period if you're, you know, if you happen to be finishing something involving Mercury, which could be writing something, it could be, well, heck, your taxes would fit in here fine. You could do your taxes from the 23rd of February to the 17th of March might be a good time to do it, since it's about looking backwards and assessing the previous year. Mercury might be more favorable to that concept, although, of course, you got to get a number the 15th, whether or not Mercury's going straight or backwards.
True.
So.
True.
And so that's what can happen to get.
Okay, and so, I mean, I know, like, you and I, we've talked about a lot of things, but bottom line is just trying to, you know, plan ahead, and if you want to be successful in something, I think it's kind of interesting, too, just to, I think it's interesting how we naturally kind of finish things up during retrogrades, even if we didn't know there was a retrograde coming.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've done that quite a few times, that I had the urge to finish something and I never had even thought about it, and then later on I found out that there was a retrograde going on. So,
Go ahead. No, that's the ideal thing. You want to see somebody in tune with your chart even if they don't even realize it. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, how much do retrogrades affect us, like, on an emotional or physical level whenever that kind of stuff is going on?
Well, it varies a bit. Part of it is based on how strongly that particular retrograde is keen into something in your chart. You know, the retrograde for Mercury, I think it goes, hold on one second. It is... in, oh God, I can't. All right. Okay, it'll be in Pisces. And so if you have something important in Pisces in your chart, you may feel the Mercury retrograde a little stronger than someone else might. But there could be other, let's put it this way, if Mercury is at 10 degrees retrograde in Pisces, if you have anything at 10 degrees in another planet in your chart, you may feel that when it aspects different parts of your chart. Some people are aware of it, some aren't. Sometimes life is about hitting a brick wall and learning something from it.
Right.
You know, not everything always goes smoothly, because sometimes, you know, we all need a smack in the back of the head sometimes to realize something, because sometimes we get all stuck in our own mind. So in Mercury, in any retrograde period, depending upon the planet involved, is always a good time for also redoing. You know, not just closing out, but rewriting something. If you're working and there's a business proposal and it's not working out, Mercury retrograde might be an excellent time to rewrite that thing. It's probably the most common retrograde. Venus and Mars both retrograde, but only about once every couple of years due to their position. And the outer planets, as I said, do it for like six to 4 months every year. So they're not as difficult when they're retrograde, because it's more like a regular thing that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Where Mercury darting in and out, Mercury kind of rules day-to-day sort of things. The faster planets like Mercury and the Moon tend to have more of an aspect, a direct effect on day-to-day life. Whereas if Pluto's going retrograde, it's more about what kind of deep issues are going on in your life, and that's not something that's going to mess up your business trip or your date plans for the evening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I look at when it comes to Mercury retrograde. Incidentally, just as a mention, anybody out there who at any point just wonders, where is this planet right now? I've mentioned this in the last show, and I always like to mention it for people who like playing with astrology. There's this website called www.planetwatcher.com, Planet Watcher, all one word. And if you click on it, it will take you right to a picture of the sky at this exact moment.
Mm.
So, you know, like I happen to have it open in front of me, and at this exact moment as we're talking, the moon is at 20 degrees Sagittarius 15 minutes, and I know that, you know, the sun is at 17 degrees 26 minutes. And if you want to play with it, there's little arrows back and forth, so you can jump it ahead a day or an hour or a year. So if anybody wants to play with the planets, the site that I like, you know, when I need a quick answer, rather than in the old days, you'd whip out your books and flip through the pages and figure it out. But this is really kind of sweet, because it's right up to date, and even while you're watching it, sometimes you'll see the moon change a couple of minutes because it's the quickest moving thing. So I just want to mention that if anybody wants to play with it, and maybe in a future show we can actually have people look at their charts and play with it on with us while we are on the air, but not tonight.
Okay. Yeah, I know. What was it, yesterday? Yeah, Monday? It seemed like everybody was really, really tired, and I thought, this thought, wow, like, what happened in the planets? Like, why is energy being zapped from so many people? I thought it was just really peculiar that so many,
well,
you know.
That was, Monday was the exact, is the day that Neptune and Mars were exactly conjunct at 2 degrees, 7 minutes.
Okay.
So, and I said Mercury and, excuse me, I said, hold on a second, my brain gets... Neptune and Mars were exactly conjunct.
Okay.
And Mars is about action, and it's not always happy. Mars in Pisces is not always happy because Pisces is a very sort of emotional and understanding sign. And really, to take action, you have to kind of be very focused. So Mars in Pisces, Mars when it's in Pisces isn't always completely happy. Now you have Mars conjunct or practically merging on Monday with the planet that rules Pisces, Neptune. So I think people were out of sorts. It's almost, Mars conjunct Neptune is like, you need coffee, you know? You,
right.
You need something to clarify you because you are kind of fuzzy. It's kind of a fuzzy energy out there. Now, it might have been a great time for psychics and spiritual people because that's kind of right. It's a great time perhaps for spiritual action because you're taking Neptunian steps or Piscean kind of steps. But no, in terms of practical application, you're right. Monday was fuzzy. Mars is moving away. It's already at 1 degree away from Neptune, and give it, let's see, how many days? Oh, by about the 12th or so, it should be beginning to be far enough away that it won't be that. And it's moving away, so the effects are waning, so to speak. So, yeah, the worst was Monday. You're right. You're picking it up.
Well, I just noticed, I mean, it just seemed like so many people were just dog tired, and I was like, you know, I stay up late on, you know, on occasion, and but it was just dragging, and then I had other people go, oh my God, I'm so tired today. And I mean, some people were around me in my area, some people were across the states, and it was just weird. I'm like, wow, it just seemed like there was just way too many people that were tired for it just to be like, oh, we all stayed up and watched the Super Bowl that, you know, got postponed and whatever. So yeah.
But that's, you know, Neptune. Look, Neptune is also about drugs and alcohol and partying, too. That's the other side. So, yeah, you could have had some people hungover on Monday. That's certainly a valid Neptunian thing. Although the energy was low anyway, so. You know,
sure.
You weren't going to shake it off that quickly. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight briefly before we start to take calls is I wanted to just go over some basic astrology stuff to make it hopefully a little easier for people to understand. You know, when I first got into astrology, I found it overwhelming because, you know, you got 12 signs coming at you and you have like at least 10 planets. Some people count asteroids and other stuff. You've got 12 houses of the zodiac that all the planets are sitting in. You've got all these aspects together, and it just, at some point it seemed to me like I had to memorize like 10,000 little bits of information to become an astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened early on for me, I found a wonderful book by a man named Stephen Forrest called The Inner Sky, and he broke it down to basically core meanings, and I've used that for a long time and adapted it to myself. And I think it helps make astrology a little simpler and clearer to understand. So just for a few minutes, I want to go over the basic sign things and how you can actually categorize them so it doesn't seem like as overwhelming. And the easiest way to get into that is to just start talking about, yes, there's 12 signs, but you can even break it down to 4 elements. You know, there's fire, earth, air, and water. And there's 3 signs in each of the elements. And what I find helps is that if you first examine what each element desires or motivates or symbolizes, and then you apply it to each sign. So I'm just going to go through the zodiac relatively quickly and give you some ideas. We start off fire. Fire energy is always about taking action. Fire energy wants to do things. It wants to travel. It doesn't want to sit around. You know, just like fire, it wants to burn. You know, it wants to keep things going.
Mm-hmm.
And the next element is earth. And earth is very practical. It wants to be very efficient. It wants to take care of physical business. It likes to plan. It likes to be very practical, and it likes to be very physical. Earth, air sign comes next, and air, like the air blowing around, it's all about ideas, concepts, thinking. Thinking about things all the time. It's about processing information and using the mind. And then finally, water is the emotional component of the zodiac, and it's any water sign is very emotional on one level or another, feeling things very strongly. And when you really think about it, these four categories, taking action, practical considerations, thinking, and emotions, and you basically got life in a nutshell. Those are the things we all do. So starting with the first sign of the zodiac, the first four signs are all about solo and a certain self-orientation. So we start with Aries, which is a fire sign, and because it's solo-oriented, and fire is about action, Aries wants to do whatever it wants to do. It doesn't want to consider anybody else. I wouldn't even call Aries selfish, because to be selfish, you'd have to be aware there are other people in the world. And Aries energy just tends to go charging right through. And I just, a little side note here, nobody is all one element, so I don't want anybody to go... just take the one thing I'm saying here and say somebody is all that way. But that's what Aries energy is about. So whatever planet is in Aries is going to have this kind of quality of it. Just want to do something any way I want to do it.
Yeah.
Taurus is the next sign, and it's an earth sign. And again, it's a solo idea. So Taurus wants physical stuff. It wants comfort. It wants to be well set up. It doesn't want to worry about stuff, and it enjoys the physical world in a very self-oriented way. Air, Gemini, the solo thinking sign, and Gemini just loves processing information. It loves talking. It loves gathering information. It doesn't even care what it's going to do with the information. It just loves information and loves to gather it. And finally, you have Cancer, the solo water sign, and Cancer feels, and it's all about Cancer's emotions. They're very into their own feelings and what's going on around them. They're also associated with home, which is also where we kind of retreat to when we're very emotional. Now, the next four signs take us a little further out of ourselves, and the next four signs are about you and somebody else. So the same energies are involved, but now someone else is hooked up with it. So, for example, you go from Aries, solo fire. Well, Leo is a fire sign. Leo wants to do things, but now it wants somebody watching. Leo wants to perform for somebody else and wants to have an audience. And Leo is happy with even an audience of one. So you have, there's that fire energy again coming out, but now it wants to do it with somebody else. Same deal, the next earth sign. It wants to be practical. It wants to be efficient with someone else. And you have Virgo, Virgos are known to be very detail-oriented. They like to serve, and I mean serve in the highest possible terminology in a spiritual way. I'm not talking servant. But here you have people who can be nurses and accountants and people who are healers sometimes, because they serve other people and take care of somebody else's needs in a very practical way. Accountants, a lot of Virgo accountants out there. Now we take the air sign. The next air sign is also involving somebody else. It's Libra. Libra likes to think of themselves as part of a couple. Libra likes to think of balance. It's always like, how is everything balanced? You're always aware of the other person's position, and are they being reasonable and fair? And then we have the water sign of duos, and that's Scorpio. And Scorpio wants to feel, and it wants to feel what the other person is feeling, and it wants that other person to feel what it's feeling. It's probably one of the reasons so many of us are afraid of Scorpios, because that's pretty intense stuff. You know, you're really asking somebody to open up, and so they want to feel the other person's feelings and have the other person feel their feelings. And now the same four elements happen again, but now we're going to take them out into the world. The last four signs are really about the world. And so Sagittarius is a fire sign, and it wants to take action, just like every fire sign does, and it does it by traveling the world. Sagittarius wants to know what's over the mountain, what's over in that other country, what's across the ocean. And that's why the symbol of Sagittarius, everybody assumes it's the centaur, but it's really the arrow. It's the arrow that the centaur is firing because it wants to go in the distance, it wants to travel. And that's really how it takes the fire further. It wants to travel the world. And as a result, Sagittarius is also about higher education and higher justice and just taking something further and out into the world. Now, Capricorn is a very practical earth sign, and all it wants to do is run the world. Okay? They like to be very efficient. They like to run things from behind the scenes. The same way they have that practical quality of the other two earth signs, the Taurus and Virgo, but now they want to apply this practicality to the world. Capricorns can have the world view. They see the forest for the trees. They don't even notice the trees that much. They see the bigger patterns, and they want to be very practical and make things very efficient. And then you move into the next air sign, and now applying that concept of thinking about the world, and you have the Aquarians, who are always thinking of the future. This is where you have the symbol for the pharmacist, the software developer, the inventor, the person creating new ideas in service to the world. You're always thinking of how can I improve the world? How can I make this better? How can I improve that? And finally, the last sign as we're coming around the end of the zodiac, we're looking at water signs or emotions connected to the entire world. And you have Pisces, the most empathetic sign of them all. To a certain degree, Pisces can understand everybody else's feelings and be very empathetic and very caring. So right off the bat now, hopefully I've narrowed 12 signs down into four categories. And you can see how they each play out in each of the signs that they're related to. You know, the fire sign, as I said, is always action. So is it action solo or is it action with somebody else or is it action about the world? And that's how you can kind of work your way through the zodiac and understand the meaning behind each sign. It also helps a little bit if you realize that to a certain degree, the start of Aries is almost like it's the beginning of spring. And the whole chart follows through in a very natural, organic way in terms of the yearly seasonal cycle. Aries is like the iris that comes bursting up from the ground through the snow. You know, that the iris knows spring is here, you know, and it doesn't even wait for the snow to melt. Here I am, I'm ready for spring. And that's really what kind of energy Aries is about. And then as it gets warmer and more comfortable, Taurus starts to graze, Cancer wants to make a home. Then we start socializing with our neighbors as the year goes around. We plant, we harvest together, which is the signs of Virgo and Libra are harvest signs. Scorpio and Sagittarius, we start going out into the world. When the winter comes and it's Capricorn time, you need to plan to survive the winter, and that's one of the reasons Capricorn likes to plan the world, and you eventually come around the Pisces, and they're sort of merging with the rest of the world, and then the spring comes again, and the year starts all over again. So there is a natural connection to the meaning of the signs, and the meaning of the time of the year that they were assigned to. Okay, and I'm speaking specifically about tropical astrology. Just as a quick mention, most of the astrology we study here in the Western world Western astrology is called tropical, and there is another branch of astrology called Vedic astrology that is still practiced very strongly in India. It's also called sidereal astrology. It's the same, different name, same thing. 3,000, 5,000 years ago, whenever astrology was first codified, it was based on the constellations in the sky. And what happened over the last several thousand years is the Earth has wobbled on its axis. And as a result, Vedic astrology or sidereal astrology has followed the constellations even though they've moved, whereas tropical zodiac is still where it was 5,000 years ago based on the seasons and the Earth.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to say is that I'm a Capricorn. If I had a Vedic chart or sidereal chart done, I would be a Sagittarius. So there is a branch of astrology that by following the constellations is actually one sign behind tropical, or you could say tropical is one side ahead. But I don't mean ahead or behind like some kind of a contest or race. It's just the different ways that either branch functions. And because I'm a tropical astrologer, that's what I study, and that's why I connect it to the seasons and the patterns of the Earth. Because for me, this is where we're living. We're living on the earth, and that's why it makes the most sense to me.
Right.
So that's just a loose thing to help beginners get a handle on what I consider the underlying themes of astrology, because there is a underlying stuff going on. You don't have to memorize 12,000 things to be able to understand astrology, but you do have to understand those kind of underlying things like fire, earth, air, and what that means when you apply it to a sign.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I know, like you're saying stuff about the Scorpio, I know that you've gone over my chart, and I have a lot of Scorpio, even though my sun sign is Aquarius, I have a lot of Scorpio in my chart that keeps popping up, which also kind of, you explained that that's also why Scorpios seem to always, I'm drawn to them and they're drawn to me. So,
mm-hmm.
May have finally changed that, but yeah.
But, yeah, essentially, just so everybody knows, when I talk about astrology, there's much more to everybody's chart than just their sun sign. Your sun sign is what you see in the paper when it says, like, you know, oh, you're born on May 7th, so you're a Taurus. That's your sun sign.
Right.
But everybody has the full solar system in their chart, and your moon and your Venus and your Mercury and your Mars are going to be in different positions. As Dawn just said, she's an Aquarian sun. She's got a bit of Scorpio in her chart, a little heavy. So she's an Aquarian with a very strong Scorpio kind of blend in there. And that's something to remember, that none of us is purely one sign.
Yeah.
Nobody's all Aries or all anything. God bless them, because that would make anybody crazy. Because we need all the signs. You know, in a funny way, we do need all the signs. It's part of what I was even talking briefly about last week, of how interesting it is to see how different people combine what's in their chart and what makes it interesting is how different people play out their energies and makes the world a lot more interesting to me. I would hate for all of us, I would hate there to only be 12 types of people in the world.
Right.
Which is what the scientists are always saying, like, well, if that proves astrology doesn't work because, you know, there's more than 12 people in the world. It's like, well, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like, you know, I had sent you, you know, somebody that I've recently started seeing their information, and it's funny because we both have gone, like, we actually think on the same level. We think the same way without either one ever saying anything. And we're both going, oh, my God, I've never met somebody that I've had so much in common with or saw eye to eye with on so many different aspects of life. And we're both kind of like, it's almost scary, you know what I mean, that somebody is out there that you can get along with so well and see so much of the things the same way in life. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yep. And there's no guarantee when you, I'm not specifically talking about the chart you mentioned to me, but just talking about couples in general. You know, I could probably match up any one person to dozens of other charts as potential partners or
right.
potential romance. But there's always that spark that we bring to it that may or may not be there. Sometimes I almost like to see charts that are only maybe 60% compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want a little fire going on there. You want a little disagreement. Otherwise, after 4 or 5 years of the two people in the couple going, yeah, I like that too. I like that too. Yes, I agree. You're just going to bore to hell with each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yes. It's not like that. Definitely not like that. But we can have a discussion
no, like
and not have we're detached enough that we aren't going to fight over it, that I
right.
can see his point of view and he can see my point of view, and we allow each other to have it, and neither one of us is trying to force the other opinion down the other person's throat. So yeah.
A nice middle ground somewhere.
Yes, very definitely. So, okay, are you ready for our first caller?
Yes, let me just make sure I have my little software up here, because as those who were here last week, or 2 weeks ago, my computer went haywire in the middle of the show. But I'm ready, and just as I mentioned, everybody calling in, I'm going to be doing these off the cuff. I'm going to pull up your chart, and normally I'll spend a couple of hours before I sit with a client and discuss the chart. But I won't miss anything major. And it would help me a lot if you call with a specific question or concern, like, you know, I'm having an issue at work, or why do I have problems with, and then name a particular thing. That'll help focus the reading and get me a little more oriented as to what to look for and what's going on.
Okay.
So.
Okay, and
fire when ready.
Okay, and how I do it is I just say the last 4 digits of your phone number. So hopefully you know what your last 4 digits of your phone number are, and I will bring you on the air. So our first caller, the last 4 digits of your number are 3707. 3707, are you there?
Yep, I'm there. Dawn, it's Lisa.
Hi.
What
is your question for Tony? I know you have a lot going on.
Just a little. This is perfect. Because astrology is something I loved and dabbled in, but never really mastered by any means. And I like to play with it, but it's really fascinating. Listen to you, Tony, because a lot of the basics, like what you just talked about I never knew about the single. I knew earth, air, fire, and water, but I didn't know that Aries through Cancer, Cancer. There were about single people, and then I was with another, and then out in the world. I love that. That was huge.
Thank you. It does help bring some logic to the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, and logic might have a very logical mind, but I left the logical mind a long ago, and now I'm trying to use it to serve my right brain. So I have an interesting chart, I'm told, and I'm a Leo, August 11th, and whether it's in the tropical or is it the sidereal? How did you pronounce it, the Vedic?
I call it sidereal. I've also heard sidereal, but I make it sid, but it's up to you.
I had never heard it pronounced. I'd only read it a million times, and I have a habit of knowing the word like a glutathione. I knew what it was, and it did a detox heavy metals, but I didn't know how to pronounce it for years appropriately until I heard someone else.
I got to hang out with other astrologers. They'll pronounce it for you. That's what I do. I have a local meeting of astrologers once a month, and we get together, and we've corrected each other a lot over the years. Anyway, so August 11th.
Sometimes it's just potato, potato, too, so.
Yes.
What
year?
Yeah, what year were you born?
Yeah, 10:15 p.m., August 11th, 1966. The day the Mayan calendar started in 3114 B.C.
10:15, you said 10:15 a.m., correct?
P.M.
P.M., okay, I want to make sure I get this right. And What was the town or city?
Dorchester, Massachusetts. I actually have one pulled up here because I've had it done, but I don't know how to decipher what it all means so much. I have all the degrees and all that.
Okay. Well, I'm pulling up now, and let me just 1 second. Okay, so you have your 21 degrees Aries rising, correct? You got the right information here? Okay, good. All right, I'll name everything here just for the heck of it. I'm going to start your Aries rising at 21 degrees and going clockwise, you have Saturn at 28 degrees Pisces. And then you have Neptune all the way over at 19 degrees Scorpio. And then, as many people do, born in the mid-60s, you have Uranus and Pluto conjunct in Virgo at 17 and 18 degrees respectively. Your Sun is at 18 degrees Leo. And you got a bunch of them down at the bottom. You have Mercury at 1 degree Cancer, Venus at 25 degrees Cancer. Wait a second. Jupiter. Hold on a second. It's all squished together.
You say 56 or 1966?
66, right?
Yes.
Correct. Right. Okay.
The middle of the 1960s,
like
right?
1950s.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm having a little dropout problems here. You're 50, it's 50 as in half a century, correct? 556?
No, 66.
Okay, I do have the right. Okay, 66. Okay, so you're a child of the 60s. Okay.
All
right, so at the very bottom, you have Mercury in Leo, Venus in Cancer, Jupiter in Cancer, Mars in Cancer, and then Mars, and then the Moon at 19 degrees Gemini, which is interesting because you're probably a lot more Cancerian than your average Leo. That's pretty strong emotional stuff down there. Your Venus is in Cancer. You relate to people by a certain way, a certain amount of mothering going on. Mars is in Cancer. Jupiter's down there expanding the whole thing. You're probably kind of a caretaker for a lot of people. Okay. Did you have a specific question for regarding this chart, or just want to hear a little bit about it?
Well, I'd love to have a brief little bit your take on it, but actually I do have a question. I've had my chart done at different times in my life.
Okay.
And but it was a long time ago. And they always said what was going on for me at the time rather than any bigger ideas. And I understand why now. Anyway, I have been through a really, really, I've been through many life changes in my life, and I've done a lot of growth, and I know it's in my chart, at least I was told by someone who I believed and really resonated with, that I brought in a lot of karma to rectify in this life, and I also brought the heart to do it and the courage to face it. And I've been through the greatest challenge in my life the last couple of years. At the same time, I have pulled out some of the most amazing opportunities, and it's just like pulling hairs off a Band-Aid how slowly it has evolved. And I really think that I'm into a really huge opening period where a lot of it's going to open. And I was wondering, and I got some general astrology on what the next year would bring for me, and was kind of pointing that out. I was wondering if you could give some specifics about any alignments or things that are coming in this year as far as forward movement and like career and home life and relationship. And I mean like a love relationship.
Okay. Well, the one thing I want to mention is you do have a very wide grand trine in your chart. And that's really kind of a blessing for a lot of people. Your Neptune is at 19 degrees Scorpio. That Cancer bundle at the bottom is 21, 21, and 25 degrees Mars, Jupiter, and Venus. Then you have Saturn over at 28 degrees. So even though Neptune and Saturn are a little wide, I feel that the Cancer things at the bottom bring them together into this grand trine. And what I see is the nature of this grand trine, you know, whenever I see something like that, I always look for the latest planet. And in this case, it's 28 degrees Saturn. You know, Neptune is at 19, and then the Cancer bundle is 21, 25, and then Saturn is 28. And that suggests to me that every time you've had a great challenge in life, it has often started with things kind of dissolving and falling apart, like Neptune starts getting affected. And then at the very end, when it's passing through Saturn, things kind of solidify and the dust clears and it all makes sense to you, but in the middle of it, you probably had no idea what was going on half the time. Now,
absolutely.
Okay. Now, so what? And what happened?
Comfortable in it finally, though.
You what? Yes. Now,
I finally
what's actually
comfortable in jumping off the abyss?
Okay. What was going on the last few years, up until about a year and a half ago, was Uranus was on your Saturn, and that's a bit of a challenge to anybody because Saturn is how we kind of structure our lives and make sense out of it. And Uranus is the transiting planet that likes to come in and pull the rug out from underneath you and surprise you. And so up until about 2 years ago, roughly, when it finally began to clear up, you probably had a period of about a year or so when your basic assumptions about life were really thrown for a loop because Saturn is how we see reality, physical reality. These are the rules we make for ourselves that sometimes we think are universal rules. They're not always, but when Saturn gets any major disruption, either from Uranus or from Neptune, life suddenly becomes very weird because the things that we took for granted, the things that we assumed were standards in life, aren't anymore. And really what happened is over the last couple of 2 years ago, you kind of had to re-put together how you viewed life. Okay. Go ahead.
Can I give you more piece of information? Because you're right on.
Okay.
Two and a half years ago, into June, I had a full Kundalini awakening. At the same time, I know there was a cardinal cross of all the cardinal signs. There was a grand cross of the cardinal signs, Aries, Capricorn, Cancer, and Libra. And I am an Aries rising. My mother's a Capricorn. My father's a Cancer. And my son is a Libra. And I can't even begin to tell you the drama that ensued. So with that in mind, continue.
Okay. Well, you do, I mean, let me see what else is going on in major planet. Well, major planet-wise, Saturn is, it's about halfway through your seventh house. So one-to-one, over the past, maybe year and a half, one-to-one relationships have been more about responsibility than fun. Okay.
You get that right. Yep.
Okay. You are coming up in a period in about a year or so when Saturn is going to be on your Neptune. And Neptune being a very spiritual planet, and Saturn can be a very focusing planet. Sometimes Neptune and Saturn can duke it out because they really, Saturn is all about practical reality, and Neptune is all about the other world, the spiritual world. And sometimes Saturn says, you know, I want to be able to touch it and feel it. And Neptune's going like, it's all, life is an illusion, man.
But I keep emerging those in myself now. That's what I've been doing.
Yes, yes. There's a certain solidification that actually can come in the next year or so because that Saturn will be hitting that Neptune that's part of your grand trine. You probably have a pretty good relationship with Neptune, so you probably have a fairly spiritual, a strongly spiritual side all along. I will say sometimes people can misuse Neptune and instead get into fantasy and drugs and alcohol and illusion, but the healthier side of Neptune is a very spiritual side. And it's not always easy. You can't really explain Neptune in words to other people. So you probably had a certain amount of gift that you've never really been able to explain to other people what it is you can sense or do. And it's a bit of a trick for you because it also squares your sun. So
because you're so right on.
Yeah. You're spiritual enough that sometimes you lose track of the physical world. When somebody has a very strong Neptune that's squaring their sun, what can happen is you can see the ideal in everything. And that's a wonderful gift. You can see that glowing heart inside everything that could possibly... But the world doesn't always work that way. Just because you can see the glowing spiritual heart inside, an alcoholic, it doesn't mean they're not an alcoholic. So sometimes you can see the ideal and not always see what's actually physically going on in front of you. That's a little bit of the curse of Neptune square your sun, but you do have it as part of the grand trine, and it actually connects well with both Jupiter and Saturn. So that, hopefully, as you've gone through life, you begin to trust your ability to see clearly and learn to separate the ideal from what is actually happening and being aware of both. It makes you probably a fairly compassionate person because when you can see that bright, shining light inside an alcoholic or a junkie or whatever that person's problems might be, you can see their potential, and that's wonderful because when they're ready to utilize that potential, you know how to direct them, and that's probably why I said you do a lot of mothering kind of quality, and I don't mean that necessarily literally, but there is like with the Mars in Cancer, sometimes people with Mars in Cancer are nurses, sometimes they're healers. Jupiter conjuncts it in Cancer, so it's actually kind of expanding this ability. Venus is in Cancer. So I imagine you've spent a lot of time helping other people heal themselves through a form of mothering. Now, they've got to notice it's you doing it. You're not doing this anonymously because you are Leo. And you're not just doing this, you know, out of the goodness of your heart. You are, but I'm also saying that you want to make sure they know it's you helping them. There's a certain quality you have.
Well, you banged it all.
What?
The whole Saturn thing, I had severe problems with drugs and alcohol after a very traumatic childhood, but after my Saturn return at 29, I worked it all out. I had to. And I went the other way, and I eventually healed myself. I was a holistic nutritional consultant and healer and awakened to all the gifts that were suppressed in my family growing up. I'm very clairsentient and cognizant, and I practice as a spiritual awakening facilitator. and healer.
And well, that's really, that's good because, you know, you have both the blessing and the curse of people born from about 62 to about 67, was Uranus and Pluto were conjunct in Virgo. And that's the same crazy energy that made the 1960s so weird. And in your case, it's in your sixth house of work, service, and health. And,
perfect.
Yeah, ideally, I mean, sure, you can mess it up. And we, you know, we all go through patterns of messing stuff up. But what happened is you've managed to turn it into, you help people transform, that's Pluto. You disrupt them in doing it. That's that Uranus. You're kind of this disruptive person in their lives. You come in, you disrupt them, help them transform, and you're doing it in a very careful way because it's a Virgo energy. So even though you're pulling the rug out from under them, you know, you're also kind of catching them as they fall, so they're not going to hurt themselves too much. So there is a natural healing, and you do have that very strong spiritual connection. You've got all that cancer from mothering. I will briefly say I'm not surprised about a turbulent childhood because Mars, the planet of energy and aggression, is right on your nadir. And what that means is that the nadir in the fourth house is all about home. And
I never had one. I mean, I did, but I didn't.
Well, that's a weird thing about it because you have Mars and you're kind of churning stuff up. So there's probably a lot of action or maybe aggression or maybe just constant movement.
Yep.
But Jupiter's in there too, and Jupiter's kind of the blessing thing. You got a lot out of this. If Jupiter hadn't been there, I would have said, run from that home as fast as you can. But with Jupiter
That's it. It turned lead to gold, and I believe that's probably going to be the outcome. I mean, my mother had me out of wedlock, gave me away to the nuns, took me back 5 months later, married somebody. The whole very close. She's a Capricorn, a very scared one. And I'm all Leo, and I lived everything she was too afraid to. And became very spiritual. We were both recovering Catholics. I was into Wicca at six. I mean, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But I ran away. My biological father, I can't even, his stepdad was an alcoholic, ran away a bunch of times by the time I was 15. Yeah. But all that awful stuff literally made me who I am because I survived it. But I did it by the skin of my teeth.
Wonderful.
When I was,
now, you're not done yet.
No, I'm not done yet, but it's got to at least start to turn to be used for other people benefit, which is what it's starting to do.
Well, yeah, there's one other thing coming up. You're talking about the upcoming period of time, and there is one thing coming up that I think for you will be easier than it would have been if this happened 20 years ago. Pluto is a slow-moving planet. It's a planet of very deep transformation. When I talk about Pluto transformation, I'm not talking about, like, changing jobs. I'm talking about the phoenix rising from its own ashes, okay?
Yeah.
Like a crystal.
My breath of double energy.
Okay, your Pluto by transit is almost on your midheaven. Now, I'm going to...
What does that mean?
Not everybody... Well, and just one second. I'm going to just win one caution here. Not everybody is born at exactly 10:15. So... your midheaven can fluctuate a couple of degrees if you were actually like maybe 10:12 or 10:18. But sometime now in the next couple of years, Pluto is going to cross your midheaven. Your midheaven happens to be in Capricorn. Your career is connected to your midheaven. Pluto, when it gets up there, will transform you and pull stuff out of you that needs to be looked at. Now, if you're on a healthy path for yourself, when Pluto gets to your midheaven, it's almost like you've kind of arrived in a major way, in a career kind of public way, and it can actually give you a lot of energy and power and ability. But nevertheless, whether you're on your path or not on your healthiest path, Pluto will pull stuff out of the past that needs to be dealt with. Pluto is the ruling planet of psychotherapy, so... and it's in Capricorn, and I find it interesting that your mom's a Capricorn.
Yeah,
so,
and you don't need to know the details. It's exactly, I cut my mother out of my life as a result of my Kundalini awakening, and she took my child, and she's an old DSS worker, and I finally fought, and I'm just about to get him back, and she's pulling teeth to make sure he doesn't. She'd rather have him go in the adoption system.
Well,
but I know, it took me a lifetime to learn to cut her out of my life. And that, as soon as I did, my Kundalini fired, and she used it to scorn me. And now the only way to get my child to come back to me is to let her back into my life and to get and heal the wounds of my mother.
You have the potential to do that in the next year
good.
Or so.
Good.
I'm not going to say it's her. It's not necessarily going to drop in your lap, okay? Pluto's difficult because none of us like to have deep things pulled out of our heart, you know, and shown to us. So and this is about your transformation. So
yes.
If your mother changes to you, it's because your eyes are changing and your heart is changing. So
mm-hmm.
That's kind of what to look at. Look at a career transformation of some kind. You could take your career to another level, but there will be stuff probably related to your mom and things like that that you'll be processing and going through. Okay? That's basically it. I'd like to get to a couple more people.
Shadow work, and I'm wondering if it's turning more into unconditional love kind of stuff.
Well, to me, that's always the goal in life. The
mm-hmm.
more unconditional love you can get away with, the better it is for you because, you know, ultimately when, you know, forgiveness is never about the other person.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It's about the poison you're carrying around in your heart that you want to get rid of. And that may be what you want to look at. There's something inside your heart that needs some purification. And I'm not here to tell you what that might be. That's your journey.
I already know what it is, but thank you. You're right on.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish the very best.
I know that I had so much self-hate that I didn't know when I installed, and I have a lot of spiritual energy, and as a child didn't know, and it, because of my mother's rejection on a physical and emotional and mental level, I turned it into self-hatred. You know, some kids go out and hurt others. Some people hurt themselves, and I hurt it and hate myself, and it took me a long time, and it's been, you know, even as a healer, I'm very good at what I do because I've stripped away and been very dedicated and going inside and looking at what I need to pull out, like you said, with Pluto. But this last one, although no matter what it was I had to look at before, this last one has been a really deep challenge. And I know that it's only manifested because it was a reflection of my own self-hate. So.
Okay.
I just wanted to know if it was going uphill for sure, because every time I get a break, I get 10 steps back, and I just feel like there's a big opening coming somewhere.
Yeah, you're going to get it. It'll be work, but you'll get it, you know, definitely.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you soon, Lisa.
Thank you. I didn't mean to take up all the caller time. That was amazing.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're pretty welcome.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
You know, Dawn, I'm not in a rush tonight, so if you want to go a little over, you know, to accommodate a couple more people, I'm more than glad to spend a little extra time on the line.
Okay, so the next caller, the last four digits of your number is 5415. Again, the last four digits of your phone number are 5415. Are you there?
Hi, I am. Wow.
Thank
you. I'm happy. I'm Diane from California, and my birthday is April 30,
53. April 3019 63, correct?
No, 5.
53, 1953.
Oh, 50. Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry, my phone connection's a little sloppy here. And what hour were you born? What time?
11:20 a.m. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
11:20 a.m. Good old city of brotherly love. Philadelphia.
Yet I didn't live there very long.
That happens. A lot of Philadelphia is in New York, in the city. I didn't even realize that. Let's see. Okay, continue. So.
I do know about my chart. My natal chart I'm familiar with. Where my planets are.
And, let me just see what I got here to make sure I got the right chart here. So you're familiar with the natal chart. You're Cancer rising, correct?
I do, at 29.
Yes, 29 degrees Cancer. Okay, we got the right chart here. Okay. This is an interesting chart. anything in particular you specifically want to ask about?
whatever is easy for you to read that you want to maybe comment on.
Okay. Well, you. It looks like you have two T squares in your chart, which is a bit of a challenge. Just so everybody understands what a T square is, when two planets are opposite each other in the chart, and then you have a different planet that is squaring the two planets, if you would draw a line, it would form the letter T between these planets, and we call that a T square. And you have one T-square involving four planets, and the other T-square involves five planets,
wow.
Okay? Now, they can be a little bit of a challenge, but the funny thing about the challenge of a T-square is it also gives you, any difficult thing in a chart can give you a lot of energy. But the tricky part of a square or an opposition is it doesn't automatically have the energy flow in the best possible route. It's sort of like it just creates all this energy. Now, if you had a grand trine like the past caller, the energy tends to flow a little more smoothly right off the bat. So you've had some challenges, and you've probably, it's been a big part of your life working these out, and I'm going to try as quickly as possible to delineate these off the cuff. Just as a quickie mention, by the way, you have a Scorpio moon at 27 degrees, and you have your sun is in Taurus at 9 degrees, and you're very late Cancer rising. The first T-square I'm noticing, Venus is conjunct Mercury in Aries. It's opposing Neptune and Saturn conjunct in Libra, which is pretty common for anybody born in 1953, that Neptune and Saturn conjunction. And they're both, all four of these planets are being squared by Uranus. Now, I was born 9 months after you, so I have some of this stuff going on in my chart. I understand Neptune square Uranus. It makes you kind of weird, okay? I mean that in the best possible way. Okay.
Yeah,
it can be a good weird, but it right off the bat, it's telling me that you probably had trouble at first fitting in with people. Your Venus and your Mercury, which is about how you talk and how you communicate, are conjunct, which means you can speak and communicate with people very clearly and very cooperatively and in a very direct manner. But when it's opposing Neptune and squaring Uranus, it's going to be odd. You have a spiritual side that's coming through. You may be able to see spiritual things that you can't explain to other people. And the Uranus square tells me that you're going to find offbeat ways to think and relate and talk to other people. You're not going, even though you can communicate well, it's not going to be in a way other people are exactly used to. The thing about being weird, the thing about being weird is nobody who's weird thinks they're weird. And Frank Zappa has a great quote. The musician Frank Zappa, he said, "I never thought I was weird. Other people called me that." So I want to say that right off the bat, as a fellow weird person, there's nothing wrong with being weird, but the problem is trying to communicate with the mainstream of people. Now, I'm going to go to your other T-square. You have Mars at 29 degrees Taurus and Jupiter at 27 degrees Taurus conjunct in opposition to your moon in Scorpio. Now, right off the bat, That could potentially be somebody who can be very emotionally combative, okay? And it's squaring, all three of those planets are squaring Pluto. When you have Pluto square the moon, you have some intense emotional stuff. I also happen to have Pluto square the moon in different signs. So some of your issues that are going on here, I'm familiar with. Pluto square the moon can give you a tremendously difficult time with your mom on one level or another, because you also have it opposing Mars and Jupiter opposing your moon. I'm suspecting you've had quite a tumultuous relationship with your mother. And
she passed away, though, so many years ago.
Yeah.
That, I really always thought she was a great mom and everything was great until she was gone, and I really looked back.
Uh-huh.
And then I disagreed with, what I really thought, and you're right. There were many issues.
Part of what was going on with the first T-square I was talking about, there's a couple of things going on. One, the beneficial side of it is that that Venus and Mercury conjunction in Aries is right on your midheaven, and that's good for career. Your sun is also in your house of career. With Venus and Mercury conjunct in your midheaven, I'm looking at somebody who probably could make a living as a writer, as a communicator, as somebody involved in the arts in some way, perhaps.
Finance has never been an issue. It's always been there. I've never had trouble in that department. Thank you, God.
Okay. But the other thing going on the opposite side, when Neptune and Saturn are conjunct in the chart, and boy, you have a tight conjunction. They're both 22 degrees. They're only about 30 minutes apart.
What does that mean?
Well, Neptune and Saturn are not planets that get along that easily, because Neptune is about kind of spaciness and spirituality and old confusion, and Saturn is about physical reality. They're both down in your fourth house, and often when people have Neptune in their fourth house, it can imply a vague mother, a mother that's hard to pin down. It could imply an alcoholic mother or a mother who is just not available to you. And yet, on top of it, you also have Saturn down there, that could often imply a restrictive mother or a home that felt restrictive and felt over-controlled. So there's this weird kind of, you both have a vague mother and a strong mother and an overpowering mother at the same time, which kind of makes a certain amount of sense, because you said you thought she was one way and then later on you realize she was another way. And I'd even say that you're definitely somebody who would be better to distance yourself from home and family. Not that you can't be in contact with them, but that you would want to control that contact. You wouldn't necessarily want to just sort of abandon yourself to your family, because there can be kind of confusion and trouble there, and you may feel overly responsible for that family.
Okay, true.
Does this make sense so far?
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. I'm just looking now at transits and what's coming up in general. And not right now, but maybe in a couple of years. Let me just check. Uranus will be crossing your midheaven. Let me just see what year that'll be. Okay, we're talking about 2015. It's about 2 years now. But the reason I'm going to mention it is Uranus, when it transits something, creates a certain amount of chaos and disruption, and it usually creates something that is a bit of a surprise. It's going to be hitting your midheaven and that Venus and Mercury up there. It's about career. I'm suspecting that around 2015, there's going to be some sort of surprise with your career. It could mean a career change. It could mean a radical shift in the way you are in your career. It could be a change of jobs. It's more career than job-oriented. So whatever your career is, it could take a shift. Your public image could take a major shift, too. That's part of the midheaven and the 10th house stuff. And that's 2015, roughly. That's one thing that's coming up for you. I'm just trying to see what else in the outer planets.
Interesting. Even at, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are, I guess things change radically.
Oh, yes. You just finished last year was your second Saturn return. For the uninitiated, the Saturn return comes anywhere from 2 to 3 times, or even 4 times if you live long enough. About every 29 years, Saturn returns to where it was when you were born. And the first Saturn return is often a lot of attention is paid to it because you're about 29 years old. And really, astrologically, it's when you become an adult, so to speak. You kind of finally feel you've arrived. The second Saturn return is kind of, you know, a period to sort of assess what you've done with the middle third of your life. And I look at the middle third because the next Saturn return is when you're 89 or 90. So you're really, last year you probably were in some level assessing what had happened so far. And then you sort of, once you get that in order in your head, you then turn and face the future. So in a sense of speaking, I look upon the second Saturn return as the great potential for Act 2 in your life, okay? I know F. Scott Fitzgerald once said Americans have no Act 2 in their lives, but I think we're changing that. As we live longer and have longer, healthier lives, I think you're finding a lot of people getting to their second Saturn return and deciding I got to do something else now. I'm assessing something. It's time for Act Two. So that's what happened to you last year, and it probably involved certain understandings about home and family, because your Saturn is down in your fourth house of home and mother and roots. And now with Uranus coming around another year or two, this could be a 2 or 3 year period where you just find yourself really kind of opening up and expanding and doing something different and moving into a different direction. Okay. I don't see too much. Okay. And when that Uranus is going to hit your midheaven in 2015, by then Saturn, by transit, is going to be on your moon, which kind of can mean a certain emotional limitation. So I'm suspecting 2015 may be more of a head year than a heart year. Okay, when those surprises come, it's going to be more logical, partially because it's going to be on your Mercury, which is about thinking. And while Saturn will be kind of holding your moon sort of in a very focused kind of a way. So that thing that's coming up, the changes and stuff, it looks promising. It's just a matter of, it'll be more head than heart is what I'm kind of saying. Hopefully you've gotten your, well, I imagine by now you've definitely got your weirdness thing under kind of a good handle on it and know how to work with it. And it's really, for you, it's a matter of they have to figure out what you're talking about. You don't always have to feel the need to explain to other people as much. You're a Taurus. You're probably pretty steady anyway. That might be the biggest issue when Uranus gets to your midheaven, because Taurus, good old Taurus suns don't always like explosive change. And by explosive, I'm saying it's just sort of sudden and rapid. And Tauruses kind of have two modes of action. They like to graze in the grass, but they like to stampede. And you definitely have a stampeding nature, because with your Mars in Taurus, when people have Mars in Taurus, when they get mad, just get out of their way, and then they'll storm around the field for a while, and then they'll calm down, and they'll be okay. You know, the funny thing is, even though Tauruses are earth signs, they don't actually hold grudges, because it's just too much work, and they'd rather be comfortable and easygoing. But if you finally get a man enough, they will charge around with the horns down and gore anything they can get their hands on. And then once they're done stampeding, they're okay. They got it out of their system. So that's what I see coming. I hope that makes some sense for you.
Oh, it was so rad. It was really, I really enjoyed it. It made,
okay.
It really is very fun and very open and very, really scientific. It has so much calculation that makes it really happen.
Perfect.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. You have a good night. Bye-bye. Okay, did you want to do one more, Tony?
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? What the heck? We're actually, we're still, oh, it's 9:30. We're still, yeah, we can keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go one more.
Okay, so 1592, the last four digits of your phone number. Again, 1592. Are you there?
Yep. Hello. How are you, Dawn?
Good. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Karina. How are you?
I think she's talking to you, Tony.
I forgot the name. I'm sorry. What was your
Tony.
Name?
Oh, I'm Tony.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can you hear
me
now? I'm sorry. We'll drop it again. What was that?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Okay, now we're perfect. Okay. So you need my date of birth or...
Yes, date of birth and time if you have it, and place.
Okay. I was born on September 7th, 1985, but I was born in Ukraine. So Ukraine is 8 hours ahead of U.S., which makes it 11 o'clock their time.
Well, you know what? I have software that corrects for that, so let me just find Ukraine on my list of countries here. And what city was it?
Yes, thank you. It was spelled K-H-A-R-K-O-V.
K-H-A-R?
K-O-V.
Oh, K-O-V, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ah, there it is. Okay.
Yeah.
And what time?
11 a.m.
Okay.
Well, their time, but yeah.
So
like
that's
11 a.m.
They might... The software I have corrects for that, so we don't. I can.
Okay.
Great thing about
like,
software.
Oh my god.
the great thing, the wonderful thing about software, in the early days of doing astrology, I had to do this all by hand. And I got really good at math, but it's so much easier to do it this way. Okay, we have a Virgo, which is your sun sign, and your moon is in Gemini, and your rising sign is Libra. And you're actually, you have Venus and Mercury. No, your Venus and Mars are both in Leo, Mercury is in Virgo, Jupiter's in Aquarius, and then the other stuff. Anything particularly you want to ask, or is there a particular question?
I kind of wanted to know a little bit about, you know, financial situation and a little bit about love, but the money is more important as far as the question go, if that would be all right with you. But you can pick up on general if you feel that would be better.
Okay. I'll start off right off the bat by you have Uranus in Sagittarius in your house of finances, the second house, and Uranus is not a steady planet. Usually when somebody has Uranus in the second house, their money source fluctuates greatly. It doesn't mean poor or rich. It just means that you'll tend to have a life where things are flush and then maybe a little tighter and money will come rolling in and then it won't come in for a while and then it'll come back in. It's a kind of a constantly changing thing. So that's one thing that I imagine by now you've noticed in your life. So ideally, when I right off the bat, I see that, and I know you're Virgo, which means that you don't like that.
No.
Because Virgos like very much to have a certain ability to plan.
Oh, yeah.
And structure. So the first thing, this is interesting. You have a T-square, too. Your Uranus is opposing your moon and is squaring your sun. So, yeah, your finances and you kind of duke it out at times. So, the thing I would say that because you do have fluctuating finances, but they fluctuate. So, it's not going to be dry or you know, really flush all at the same time. So I would say use your Virgo abilities and make sure you sock some stuff away and be very careful when you're having your flush times so you have something to get you through the dry times. It's sort of like the tides, you know, for you that your finances are kind of like irregular tides, okay? If it was regular, it'd probably be easier for the Virgo because you just plan like, oh, in 2 years I'll have money and then in 2 years I won't and I can plan that. But that's not the way it works. It's a little more disruptive. The more flexible you can be with your finance, the more you'll be working with the energy that's available to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because your finances are going to fluctuate. So if you're going to sit there and plant yourself in the ground and say, I'm not budging, you're not really working with it. So obviously a certain flexibility is helpful. And yes, even though you are Virgo, you do have, you don't have that much earth in your chart, so you don't have to be too rigid about this. Career-wise, I'm looking at you have your midheaven is in Venus. Your midheaven is in Leo, and Venus is in Leo, and Mars is in Leo. There seems to be some sort of, whatever career you have, you're kind of the focal point with Venus up there. You communicate with people with Mars up there. You take a lot of action. You could be a sports-oriented or action-oriented in some way. Even your career doesn't look like a quiet thing, okay?
No, I can tell you all about that. It's not quiet at all.
There's a lot of action going on.
Every day is a brand new day. Every hour is a new hour.
And you have a lot of personal, I wouldn't call it charisma exactly. Pluto is right up front in your first house, almost on your ascendant. And when I see Pluto right up front, these people, without even realizing it, can come across as very dominating. Okay.
It's true. Like, every time I meet somebody, okay, if it's the kind of phone, you know, they're like, yeah, whatever, right? But if I meet them, and like if I say something, you're like, oh shit, we're not messing with
Well, and it's time. I'm not saying you're coming off that way in the sense of like you.
No,
you
I
want
actually do that. I've been hearing that all my life.
It's a natural thing you do, and actually, there's it's almost a, even when you're trying to be gentle with Pluto right up front like that, there's a certain, not exactly charisma, but there's a certain energy up front where just you dominate people. They will listen to you, you know. Even when you might just be making a joke, they'll, like, listen. They'll pay attention. There's a certain kind of energy that's there.
Oh, God. Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, my God.
So, and that's not a bad gift to have. I mean, it certainly can help you accomplish things that have to be accomplished.
I think they're more scared, so they didn't give in.
Well, that's if that's what works, you know, to me, I would only say as long as you're doing that in service of something and not just because you like to yank people's chains.
Oh, no.
No, I know. I think that's a healthy thing and because you know how to use it and you have that ability.
I think I know too much.
You do have, let's see, we have something we refer to as, well, it's kind of called a mystical rectangle, which is not a term I'm always great or happy with, but what it is that there's four planets that if you connect the lines between them, it kind of creates a rectangle in your chart. And it means that those planets are cooperating with each other. So Venus, how you relate to people, is cooperating. Mm-hmm. Uranus, the planet of disruption and radical change, which means you can be very flexible,
mm-hmm.
is cooperating
mm-hmm.
with Jupiter, which means you're very open-minded and loose and free, and is cooperating with the moon, that is very emotional, and it's in Gemini, so it's kind of communicating. So you probably relate very well to people. I mean, and the Pluto up front also helps, but you work with people very well. I mean, that's what you do. As a matter of fact, your Sun is in the 11th house, which is it's considered the house of group goals. So you work with groups of people to accomplish, and that can be both altruistic or it can just simply be a job where you tend to be in charge of a lot of people in one way or another. Leading people, and I don't mean it like, you know, I'm not saying you're going to be up on the, you know, the podium saying, you know, follow me.
That's like totally not me, but it's true. Like, I don't stand at a podium and say, okay, guys, you know, this is what we're going to do, and they follow me, no. But somehow when I say something, they're like, oh, yeah, totally makes sense. But if somebody says the same exact thing I say, they go, like, no, it's not going to work. Oh, hold on. Let me ask Karina. Oh, Karina, what do you think? Yeah, sure. Let's go. Okay. Oh, it's a perfect idea.
Okay. And that's probably with your Venus and Leo, you know, you relate to people in a certain egotistical way. And I don't think the word egotistical is necessarily a bad thing because that is what Leo is about. But that does kind of chafe in you a little bit. But that Virgo in you says, well, at least the job got done. But that Leo and Venus Leo says, hey, that's me, you know, you should notice me. The other thing I see in your natal chart is that Jupiter is right on your nadir, which suggests to me that in some way, shape, or form, you had a good childhood, a beneficial, open childhood. I'm just trying to see. I don't see. Well, your mom and dad probably didn't get along great, but.
Oh, well, let's just say that they got divorced when I was, like, a few months old. So, yeah, I don't think that, you know, hopefully matrimony lasted a long time.
Yeah, that's, I'm not surprised because your Sun and Moon square each other, and that's sort of an indication of how Mom and Dad got along, and the square is a difficult aspect. Transit-wise, I'm just trying to see what's happening in your chart, and Pluto will be trining your Sun. That's helpful in a transformative way. You find yourself growing and evolving, but a trining transit is never as disruptive.
Yeah, that's true.
Other stuff. Neptune's opposing your. Let me just check the numbers here. Well, it's a little wide, but Neptune is opposing your Mercury. So you've probably found yourself maybe over the past year and maybe even into this year, there's a certain kind of, let me try to put this into words. Neptune is how we, Mercury is how we think. A transiting Neptune from the opposite side of the chart suggests that you're having to deal with ideas that don't make a lot of sense. That people are challenging your thoughts, they're saying you're not necessarily working realistically. It's just a passing period of time. But it can also be a period of time when you personally have a lot of wonderful idealistic visions and dreams of what can be done. The only problem, it's a little difficult for you right now to communicate that to other people because Neptune is in opposition. So I'm saying write down those dreams and fantasies and whatever that you think you'd come to.
I do.
And in a year or two, as it lightens up and Neptune moves on a little bit, you might actually be able to pull these things off.
Oh, I hope so.
And you'll be able to see them a little more clearly because once Neptune moves away, you'll be a little clearer for you to see what actually is just purely idealistic and what can actually be brought about.
Mm-hmm.
One just quick comment, and this is, because this just, I don't know, just sort of popped out at me as I'm talking to you. Your north node is in Taurus in your seventh house. And what an astrologer does when they look at a chart, I see the north node as the direction to go in which you will grow the most in this life. If you believe in reincarnation, some people feel your north node is kind of your karma and your south node is what you've already done. So what I'm seeing is, and I think you're working this very well, the seventh house is about one-to-one relationships and partnerships. And Taurus is about a certain steadiness and practicality. And in a sense, the more you friends you make, the more you work with people, the more you interact with people and connect with them, the more you're actually looking, you're learning your karma this time around. And I don't mean karma. I mean karma. I'm not a person that believes that karma is a form of punishment. I believe karma is almost like what you chose to come in this time to learn about. Okay, so you're learning about one-to-one relationships this time around.
Yeah, I really am, yes. Like, I don't mean to take up the radio time, but
okay.
I was with, you know, I was dating somebody for a while. Anyway, we kind of broke it off, and then, you know, we're like, you know, and I'm Virgo, so I'm like, look, don't ever call me again. We're done. And he goes like, and that's it. That was the end of the conversation. But then, you know, after a while, you know, I felt bad, and I'm like, oh, gosh, you know. So I called him. And we've been going back and forth, but each time that we break off and get back together, it's like we learn something about each other. Like, I learned that I can kind of break it off and then somehow make it back together, glue it back together. So, yeah, it's true. You're making a lot of sense.
And also, it's not, I mean, it's about love relationships, but the seventh house is also about any close partnerships. That could be close business partnerships. It can also be intimate one-to-one friends. So, like your best friend, Tennessee.
Yeah, and then I was friends with somebody. But see, I don't know what happened in the year of, 2007. It was like maybe June or July. I was close friends with somebody for like so many years. I think we were friends for like, she was a friend of mine. We were friends for like, I don't know, 13 years, and she was a Gemini. And that July came, you know, and that's it. Like, we have not said a word to each other in like 6 years now. Yeah. And I kind of do think about her once in a while. I'm like, I hope she's doing okay, but yes.
That's curious. I just popped back to 2007, right?
Yes, it was 2007 because my great-grandma passed away in February of 2007. So, yeah, the friendship ended in July of 2007. Yes, that's correct.
You're saying it's September or so, you said? Or July?
No, July.
July. Okay, just a quick comment. Neptune was opposite.
And she's a Gemini, so I don't know if that would make any sense to you.
At the time, Neptune was opposite your Venus. And whenever you have a Neptune opposition to a planet, it can kind of fuzz things up the same way. Like right now, Neptune opposite your Mercury is fuzzing up ideas and stuff and thinking. This is fuzzing one-to-one relationships. And probably what happened is the two of you kind of went out of sync in a way and weren't connecting.
Yeah.
But it didn't necessarily have to be a full-time parting.
Right.
So if you feel like it, and I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't, it's really up to your heart, and you have a moon in Gemini, the season of Gemini, you kind of still understand each other. You could try to see...
She actually comes to me in a dream. That's like the weird part. She still comes to me in a dream.
Oh, well, maybe... Look, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm saying you might find an interesting to contact her at some point, because I don't see any reason.
Well, I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking about it, but see, I don't know how she's going to react to me, you know, contacting her, knowing her she's a Gemini. She'll, like, explode.
Well, maybe, maybe not. My feeling is that didn't have to be a permanent breakup. It certainly was a relationship that went through some confusion for a while. See what happens if you want.
I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now because I'm like, should I not? So, but I think by telling me that, I think I just might go ahead and, jump the gun. And so if you don't see me on Facebook, Dawn, you know what happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you have a good night. I hope it all made sense to you.
It's perfect. And where can I find you? Actually, I'll just ask Dawn that way. Like, I don't have to keep,
Go ahead, Anthony. Go ahead and tell her where you are.
I'd be happy to announce it on the air. What the hell?
okay.
I have a website that's aspico.com. That's the letter Anthony, S for Stephen, and my last name, pico.com. Or I'm also on Facebook under Anthony Pico. And finally, I do have a blog that I do on Tuesdays on WordPress. And if you look for Cosmic Tuesdays, plural, one word, on WordPress, that's my weekly blog about it's astrology and other metaphysics and spirituality and whatever.
That sounds really cool. That's interesting. You're absolutely wonderful. Your energy is phenomenal.
Okay, and that's how you find me. Any one of those ways, my email will be there, and you'll be able to drop me a line.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks,
you guys have a wonderful night. No
you
problem.
Too.
Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Take care.
And Pico is spelled P-I, C as in cat, C as in cat, O. So
right.
P-I-C-C-O.
It's two C's because I'm Italian. Because one C. But
Italians
don't have to do everything.
In New York. So it's funny, yeah, because we actually, and we have all your information, of course. So if you tuned in and you went to our Blog Talk page, if you just scroll down to the bottom on the side where it says all about, you know, what the show is about, down at the bottom is all the links and stuff to all of Tony's things. So did you want to put anything else out there, Tony?
Me? No, I that's
okay. Okay. Well, we are good. And Tony joins us every other Tuesday. So we'll definitely be having him come back on. And what will that be? That'll be Valentine's, right around Valentine's. We're going to bypass that. We came on this week because the
maybe
secret.
The broken hearts will be on Tuesday.
I know, right? The secret is my birthday. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's right.
Yeah, my birthday is this week, so we got you this week, and then, so we'll bypass Valentine's, and we'll see what comes up after that. So it'll be interesting. I mean, have you noticed any major changes with 2013 so far that maybe you had expected or predicted or anything?
Not yet. It's still anybody's game because Pluto and Saturn, as I mentioned, are in the sky in square. That's sextiling each other. You have Uranus sort of squaring loosely Pluto at this point. So there's still kind of a potential earthquake, and I mean that metaphorically, although literally too could be. we're not done with changes, and it's quiet right now, but. Next show I'll see what I can look at, very specific dates I'm going to look at the upcoming year in case of any explosions. But right now, things are quiet, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's keeping that way for a little while longer, so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tony, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. You take care.
You too, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone, so that wraps it up for this evening. Thank you so much for joining us, and again, if you got contracts to sign, you've got weddings to plan, whatever it is, if you're wanting to know dates and the most auspicious dates that are going to work best for you, make sure you give Tony a call. And he says he usually takes a while to actually work out the charts because he really goes into great detail, and he truly is amazing. And if you haven't had the chance to have your chart read by him, tune in 2 weeks and make sure you call in early, and hopefully we can get you on. And if you if you did get a chance, and obviously give other people a chance for a while, and let people know. As always, thank you, everyone. God bless. Live your passion and change the world. Good night, everyone.